This is I Made This, Episode 2 with Taylor Aller. I'm Alyssa Tebow, and this is I Made This, the podcast. Right now, there are so many weird and wonderful ways to make money by doing what you love. We can create jobs, businesses, and even lifestyles. Come with me as I speak to some of the most ambitious, passionate, and dedicated people who are turning these dreams into reality, and they're making a living from it. How are they doing it? How did they get there? Well, let's find out. Well, my guest today is possibly one of the most bubbly and energetic people I have ever met. Taylor Aller, or Aller, as I would say in my Aussie accent. She came into my life through a networking group here in Vancouver, and she told me a little bit about her story, and I needed to know more. Taylor describes herself ultimately as a multi-potentialite. Now, this was a term that I'd never heard before, and I found it intriguing. But it's a person essentially who has many different interests and creative pursuits instead of just one true calling. Now, it was one of those moments where I heard this term and it immediately resonated with me, because we do. We sometimes have a number of different interests or things that we're pursuing that may not necessarily be connected, but it's all part of what makes us us. Now, Taylor can have anywhere up to like 6 projects on the go at any one time. She is the ultimate multitasker. She's a registered massage therapist, a public speaker, a blogger, a professional hip-hop dancer, a volunteer educator, and she and her husband created and they now run a program called The Relationship Project. We delve into this quite a bit. It's an idea that started small and then grew and grew and grew as things do. They snowball. And the concept is that they highlight the real side of relationships, their arguments, their flaws. They put it all out on a blog and their social media. And through that, they help others open up about their struggles. And now they run workshops and it's a full-blown business. We get pretty deep towards the end as well. Taylor talks about some really personal struggles with mental health and how she manages this, especially given most of her work involves helping others. A piece of advice for success at the end I just love as well, and I can't wait for you to hear it. So here it is, my interview with Taylor Aller. Welcome, Taylor Aller, to I Made This, the podcast. So nice to have you on.
Oh, thank you for having me, Alyssa. I'm so glad to be here.
Where am I finding you tonight? Are you just at home?
I am at home. I am sitting across from my husband. He has headphones in and he's engineering, audio engineering, and the dog is in the bedroom with a chew toy. So
it's a very productive night for the both of you at home.
Absolutely. It's like our typical night.
Yeah. Just wave at each other every now and then. How are you going? Yeah, I'm good. How are you? Yep, good.
A little wink there.
Yeah. Now, what I really liked when I first started talking to you was that you don't just identify with one thing. Now, yep. What was this term that you told me about?
So I call myself a multi-potentialite, and it sounds kind of like a big term and it may sound snobby, but I swear it's not. I came across the term. I didn't coin it, so don't give credit for that. It is from Emily Wapnick, I believe is how you say her last name. And she had a TED talk and it blew my world apart in a really good way. Because she described pretty much how I felt my entire life, that I've never really identified with one single thing. And I don't have one singular passion. I have handfuls at a time. And it just really resonated with me. So a multi-potentialite is someone who pursues more than one passion at the same time. And they create a life around, you know, both of their different worlds, or many, or multi. They can have more than one, more than two, more than three, as many as they like. And I really feel like I fit under that label, because I never fit under just massage therapist or just wife or just blogger or just educator. I fit into all these different boxes, and I never knew how to describe myself and find my people and my tribe. So multi-potentialite is that's what fits.
It's almost like my new favorite word, because I remember all the time. Because while I was growing up, I mean, you know, people had always told me, you know, find one thing that you really love to do and just do it really well. And I mean, you know, I was the kind of kid at school that I did a lot of things. Like I was sporty, I was musical, I was, you know, good at English, and I, you know, eventually moved into journalism, but I also still liked doing other things at the same time, and I didn't want to give up everything else for the sake of just doing one thing. And that seems like it's a similar story for you. Like that was almost an awakening for you.
Oh, absolutely. I was going through, I was right at a transition point in my life when I ran to that TED Talk and when I ran to another talk that talks about, you know, following your curiosity and that you don't have to have one singular passion. And it just, it was such divine timing because I was stuck between, you know, do I choose one or the other? And all of these pressures I felt all my life, similar to what you're saying, growing up, I was interested in so many things. And as a kid, you're allowed to be. And then as soon as you, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes, grow up.
Oh, I can see them. Yep, don't worry.
Choose one thing and you have to be good at that and base your career and your life around that. And I was always terrified of that and that it just didn't fit right. And I felt like I was always stuffing myself into a label that never fit. And then, you know, I would become uninterested in what I was doing because I felt forced to do it. And yeah, so this came at a beautiful transition point for me and it just gave me the freedom and allowed me to give myself the permission to do what I wanted to do and to do many things. So at that time I was dancing pretty much full time, touring internationally, competing internationally, and I was going to school and finishing my education towards registered massage therapy. And I was sitting here being like, I have to choose one or the other. I have to do one or the other. And I realized, no, I don't. And I stuck with the company that I was dancing with for all through the rest of, you know, my schooling. And then I've come back to it a few years since I've graduated, like almost every year after that. And now it's also allowed me to pursue relationship blogging and hosting events with my husband around Canada and yeah, getting to do all kinds of different things. So that permission granting was all due to that divine time.
Yeah. Now let's go back to your career as a hip hop dancer. Now, cause the way that you got into that was quite interesting.
Yeah, I got into it. It was from a dare. It was a joke. I had been an athlete all my life. I had done tons of other competitive sports. I did competitive gymnastics. I played in, you know, on two different rep soccer teams. I did track. I did snowboarding. I did swimming. Like you name it, I had done it. And I'd really ran my body into the ground before it was even full grown. And I had a lot of injuries because of it. And I just never took the time to let them heal properly. And I had to step away from a lot of my sports. And someone that I was going to school with at the time dared me to take their dance class. It was like bring a friend day. And I was like, no, dancing's not a real sport. And she's like, I dare you. And I was like, okay, fine. And honestly, I fell in love with it. And it was so much fun. I was like laughing the whole time. It was really great. And because of the injuries I had lost a lot of stability and balance and I needed predictable movement instead of unpredictable lateral movement, which is what a lot of my sports were at the time. And dance completely fits into that. It was choreographed movement. So I knew exactly where I was going. It focused a lot on my balance and joint stability. So it ended up helping me rehab from injuries that I have and allowed me to continue doing athletics because I definitely got a wake-up call that dance is a real sport and it is challenging. It's so hard and so different. And and then that's kind of how I started it. I just, after that, I fell in love and I joined different classes and then I joined competitive classes and then I joined dance companies and moved to Vancouver and auditioned for companies here. And yeah, it's just kind of gone from there.
I just love that because I know that I've sat around with my friends before and be like, should we do a hip hop class? Yeah, we should do it. And you know, and we think, oh, but we'll be so bad at it. Let's just do it anyway.
I'll do it anyway. It is so much fun and it's so approachable. Like anybody can dance. Anybody can dance. You can have a blast.
And this is where you met your husband as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So this was in Edmonton where I was living at the time and I was living in a small town just outside of Edmonton and I was dancing in the city. That's what we called Edmonton. And that's where I met my husband. He was dancing there as well. He was an instructor there at the time. And then we became really good friends over the years. And then I also became an instructor at the studio. And then we had started to explore what else is out there besides friendship. And it took me a really long time to decide to take the leap. It took me about 2 years to call him my boyfriend after we had decided to start seeing each other. And I had a lot of commitment issues, a lot of trust issues, a lot of everything issues. And he was so incredibly patient and kind when I may not have been. It just grew from there.
Mm-hmm. Now that's fascinating that it took you so long. Mm-hmm. And when you say you had all these commitment issues, because now the two of you run relationship workshops. Tell me about how this started.
Oh, Alyssa, it's almost embarrassing to work out. So being in the dance community and being in a long-term relationship is a little bit rare with dancers to have two dancers that are together and are together a long time and have a functional relationship and are married. That's really rare. So a lot of our friends would ask us for relationship advice, or they would want to come over, or they would be texting us or calling us, wanting our feedback or our opinion. So they went through a breakup. What can we do about it? And we're going through this issue and we have this difference. And we thought, you know what, like, we're getting these questions all the time. Maybe we'll just have a dinner with our friends and we'll just talk about relationships and then get it all out of the way then. And we don't have to be the only people that they talk to, and they can get all these answers and we can have a great discussion. And my husband's like, sure, like, that's fine. And I never use my half ass. I always use my full ass. I just jumped in and ended up developing like a 4-pillar curriculum, because I'm truly an educator at heart, and that's just how I organized it. And then I bring it to my husband and I'm like, okay, look, we have this 4-pillar curriculum, and I'm showing him all the stuff, and he's like, that's great. We're not going to have any friends anymore. We don't want to be our friends anymore. And I'm like, oh crap, you're right. And well, what do I do with this? Like, it's not going to be a dinner. And he was like, well, why don't we make it like a workshop or something, or have it like be an event. And I was like, okay, we could do that. Maybe spread it over a couple of days and bring food. And yeah, so it just spiraled from there. And we held our first event and just had, I think, around 12 of our friends there, and not all of them were in relationships. Some were like cousins, some were single. And they came and they joined us for this 2 days, and we fed them and had all these different giveaways and all of this stuff with the event. And not having been an event planner, I've never done anything like that in my life. I didn't even plan my own wedding, so I don't know why I thought I could do that. Yeah.
Wow.
The success and the feedback we got was, you know, you should put these resources on a blog. Like, we should have these somewhere. And do you guys have an Instagram? And at this time we were like, no, we're just kind of winging it. And you thought it was cool. Great. And they're like,
yeah, this was just an idea we had the other day.
Yeah. We just wanted you to stay our friends.
So. And what was their response when you went back to them and said, we were planning a dinner, but now we're going to have a 2-day workshop?
You know, it was really receptive, you know, because Jake and I were talking amongst ourselves, like, maybe we should have a dinner, maybe not. And we had talked to a few of our friends. We said, you know, like, what do you think if we just made this a workshop or an event? And they were like, oh, I'm totally down. I would come. Like, that sounds great. I'd love that. And then a lot of people were like, is this therapy? I don't know. We're like, no, we're not qualified for that. Like, we're just sharing what we've learned, you know, creating space for you to learn too and to share too if you want to, but no pressure. And we're not all going to hold hands in a circle and share. I mean, unless you want to. And yeah, and they were really receptive to it. And I think after the first event, for sure, it was a great learning experience for us. We learned what worked, what didn't. We got really great feedback and suggestions of what they wanted more of, things they had seen, things they hadn't seen that we thought they had before. And yeah, it was really great. So all the events we've done after that have just, everyone gets better and better. So it just keeps growing and growing. And, you know, now we've developed like a workbook that goes along with it. Yeah. And we're now getting lens round two. What's the next level of the relationship project?
Wow.
We're still just kind of winging it and it's going well. So yeah.
At what point when you were putting all this together, did you think, do you know, we could actually make this a business?
You know, that was a really big challenge for me, because I'm a volunteer at heart, and I think that this is stuff we should learn and share readily. And it was really hard for me to want to charge my friends for that. And a lot of people were saying, you know, like, oh, I would totally pay to come to this. And I would, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, great. Well, we are going to charge for it just so that I'm not completely losing money. And then I ended up meeting with a business coach in April before our latest event that happened in May in a different province. And she was like, you can make this a business. Like, you're allowed to do that. And it's okay. Yeah. Your friends did this. Would you pay to go? And I was like, oh, of course I would. And they were like, she's like, of course your friends will pay too. And I was like, oh, right. And she's like, now that your friends have gone, like, you're getting people that aren't only your friends, you know, people that are hearing about you and people that you don't know. And of course they should pay for knowledge. Like, you pay for education. That's a given. And so it's still kind of a challenge, you know, when we set the prices for tickets for events and, you know, we do stuff like that. I'm always like, you're allowed, Taylor. It's okay.
Well, it is. And especially when you're creating something from scratch and you have this brand new product, you know, it doesn't have a physical value to it. So being able to put a price on it
Yeah. On the education and on the experience of attending those workshops and retreats. It was and still is a challenge for us, for sure.
And you poured quite a bit into your first event too, didn't you?
Oh my gosh, that was such a learning curve. Yes, I thought I had to do everything myself. I did everything from the calligraphy on the welcome bags to organizing all the sponsors to cooking all of the food to decorating and setting up and taking down, plus running the workshop, you know what I'm there for.
Yeah,
and I definitely had a burnout after that and learned a lot of lessons along the way about event planning and having assistants and having people there to help you and catering. My God, get catering. Do not cook it yourself. You know, leave the event to go put something in the oven and come back. Like, that was awful. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Learning curve. And of course, working with a business coach has been probably the most helpful in that regard of, you know, explaining behind the scenes of how these things work. Because I had to teach myself how to design a website and I had to teach myself how to start a social media account for businesses and how to do all that. And
It
was a lot of fun to learn, to be honest. It was a blast. I love learning new things. So part of me really enjoyed that. And then a part of me was like, what the heck am I doing? I need help. It's okay to ask for help. I don't have to do everything myself. So that first event just nailed that lesson home again that I don't have myself. Yeah.
And so how big has this grown so far? Because it's only been a year or so that you've been doing this?
Then we launched in November of last year. So it honestly is running away from us with how much it's growing. And we're trying to keep up because, you know, we do have day jobs and being a potentialite, I have other things that I do and that I really enjoy doing. So we're keeping up with it as much as we can. It's grown quite a bit in terms of the blog. That has blown up the most, I think, with our audience, our readership, our worldwide access. Our Instagram following is starting to grow. What I'm noticing the most and what I'm most happy about is that we get a lot of engagement, not specifically with like comments and shares, but we get so many personal messages, so many DMs on Instagram. I think that's what it's called. We get
that's what the kids call it, I think. Yeah.
I think I'm still learning, but I don't have Twitter. I don't have Snapchat. You know, I'm working on that, but I think that's where it's grown the most is our online community feels really comfortable reaching out to us and talking to us. And that was the point, to showcase real relationships and that we can ask for help. And it's normal to go through struggles and it's normal to be annoyed with your husband if it's like the 18th time you've said, put the dishes in the dishwasher, you know, like that's normal. Everybody goes through that. And, you know,
and if you've got people that, I mean, so obviously this started with your friends and now this is growing to people that you don't know. Why do you think they're so comfortable coming and talking to you? Because obviously that's a very personal thing to be able to talk about your relationship. Absolutely. What is it about the way that you guys go about it that really gets people comfortable talking about it?
Really good question. You know, I think a lot of it is because as much as we can, we try to walk the talk. So we do that a lot. Where we hang out most on Instagram, we share a lot of our struggles. We share, you know, like, hey, I yelled at my husband for this the other day. And then Jake will share like, I hate that men have to behave this way. Like, why is that? And, you know, we really share and open up about our personal struggles. We take that first step. And then what we're hearing back is a lot of like, oh, hey, me too. Me too. Oh, hey, look over here. Me too. And that's kind of collectively what it's grown from. And then we hear a lot of like, my friend sent me over here and my friend follows you and now I'm following you and now my husband's following you and my girlfriend's following you. And yeah, so that I think has been probably why is that we try to put on our courageous pants and take the first vulnerability step out there. And really that's what it's about. Like, you live once and why not share those things? And of course we don't share everything we go through and we have to kind of process that stuff first before we put it out on the internet for everybody to read.
What's that process like?
Oh my God. So hard. We've had recently, we've been approached in public of people saying like, hey, I know I follow you guys on Instagram. It's so cool to see you in real life. And it's people we don't know. And a part of me is like, wow, that's so neat. And then immediately after it's like, oh God, you know that I yell at my husband. This is so uncomfortable. And I'm seeing you and I'm making eye contact with you.
But it must just be so refreshing because, you know, you see all these couples on Instagram and they just look like they're just having the best time and there's never anything wrong. And I think it really glosses over the realities of what a lot of people face.
And I think it totally undercuts how much hard work it takes to enjoy those highlight moments. Because yes, the highlight moments are part of relationships, you know, the wedding days, the proposals, the crazy expensive gifts or the really thoughtful things that happen. But to us, real relationships are built in the everyday moments. And those are the things that we don't see on social media. We get to see the highlight reels. We don't get to see the basis of it. And we often equate it to a cupcake. And what we get to see all the time is the sprinkles. But no matter how great the sprinkles are, you have no idea what that cupcake tastes like. You know, it could be...
Oh, I love that. I love that analogy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to showcase the batter. We want to showcase the ingredients. We want to showcase, you know, the eggshells that dropped in, pick back out, you know, in order to put those sprinkles on and have it really taste good. So,
and that must have been, that must have been quite an interesting conversation straight off the bat when you guys were talking about this, because you so you put together your 2-day event, and then what was the conversation like when the two of you were having this conversation? Be like, you know what, everything that we do privately here, I think we should let the world know about it. What was that like?
Oh man, it was a little bit rocky, especially at the beginning. Now that we've been sharing for a while, we're kind of used to that process and we're comfortable with it, and we'll check in with each other of like, hey, are you cool if I post this? Or what do you think about this? Can you read this over? Is there anything that, you know, you're uncomfortable with? But at the beginning, it was really, really hard. I remember pressing publish on one of the first blog posts we did about volcanic women, and that's sharing my own struggle about how I tend to explode. I am much more comfortable saying I'm pissed than saying my feelings are hurt. Mm-hmm. And I will gladly put on the sweater of anger because it's so comfy and well broken in than the really uncomfortable shirt of pain. And I remember sharing that and pressing publish and then cringing and thinking like, oh my God, I should take it back, because it's terrifying to show people that you're not perfect. And we feel so much pressure in today's world with social media and how much access we have to each other's lives to be perfect. And then I have to remind myself like, wait, this is what I'm looking for in the world, and it's not here. And we're deciding to be trailblazers, and that means we have to share first. And, you know, we have had very, very seldom negative reactions. But really, I think we're just triggering what other people experience too. I think they might see themselves in it, and that's why they're reacting to it.
What I just love about this whole concept is it was just a small idea that just slowly snowballed. And as you say, you didn't use your half ass, you used your whole ass, which is just, you know, if you're going to do something, you got to do it right, you know?
Yeah.
But were there any kind of moments when you're going through this and you're like, what are we doing?
Oh my gosh. All the time, Alyssa. All the time. All the time. Often, especially when I look at, you know, the rest of my multi-potentialite life, and I think, okay, how am I going to divide my time between my practice as an RMT and dancing and, you know, working on the relationship project. And of course our family and travel, and we just bought our first home. So now like our house is full of DIYs and construction and packing. And you know, we look at each other going, what are we doing? So we found that often life kind of comes and goes in seasons, and we try our best to roll with how those seasons come. And sometimes it's all about relationship project. If we have an event coming up and we have lots on the blog, we'll put more of our energy there. And then if we've got more in our personal life or more with dancing, you know, it kind of comes and goes that way. Mm. That's mainly what we look at each other and think, what the heck are we doing, is when our calendar is just like 18 things in one day. And we look at each other like, that's not humanly possible. And then we often look at each other thinking, what the heck are we doing, when we share the really personal stuff. And then we know like our parents are reading it and our families are reading
it. Yeah, of course.
The scary part. It's easier when it's anonymous almost. But when we know that our family and friends and like my college classmates are reading it, my exes and his exes may be reading it. And
Can you just give me an example of something that was quite personal that was hard to share, just so we can get an idea of just how deep we're talking?
Oh, well, the volcanic women for sure was really difficult for me. My husband shared a similar article. He called it Stonewall Men, how growing up he was shown, you know, that men don't have emotions. They have to, like, it's weak and, you know, you can't show that, you're not supposed to cry. And, you know, that whole stereotypical thing, how as an adult, as a grown man, he had to learn how to vocalize his emotions. He had to learn what they were called. He had to learn vocabulary around that. He had to learn how to communicate that. I think that probably was the most vulnerable for him. another really difficult one, because I've struggled with mental health pretty much, I would say, from childhood until now. And I battled depression. And I think that also comes and goes in seasons. And sometimes it's really challenging. And I remember about a year ago, it was really difficult. And I was back in therapy every week. And I was having to tell my parents, you know, this is what I'm doing, this is where I'm at. And we decided to share that on our platform of how to have a thriving relationship when you're battling mental health issues. And that one was really hard because it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Expose something that you feel is a weakness, even though it's not. And I tell myself it's not, my therapist tells me it's not, but you know, I still am like, oh, I don't want to expose this raw bleeding wound. And for anybody who does have depression, they know that it's not a one-time thing. Like, it's something that stays with you, and it is sometimes louder on other days and it's quieter on other days. And yeah, knowing that that's going to be an ongoing thing that I'm working on, it's not something. Like with our relationship, we often share things we've resolved or somehow come to a conclusion to. Some of it's cyclical, but most of it is like an issue or a day occurrence that we share about. But when we're sharing those big concepts, you know, of like, this is how I operate in conflicts and this is what I'm working on, and I battle mental health issues and this is how I try to be a good wife and how he tries to be a good husband around that. And, you know, how I became a suicide survivor because I had somebody there with me that could help and that I could feel comfortable asking for help. And yeah, so that, I think probably for me personally, that was that, and Volcanic Women were the most difficult to share.
That is just incredibly brave.
Oh, it was terrifying. I was like sweating on my armpits.
And, I'll bet.
Oh gosh. Yeah. But thank you for saying that.
It's such a personal journey, especially. And to make that decision to share that publicly, do you find that helps you as well? Or would you sometimes you prefer not to?
Long term, I think it does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The conversation going, it starts to end the stigma. We're having, you know, those conversations and we're not hiding and creating shame in the moment. It feels anything but helpful. But that's my own personal struggle of being like, I don't want to tell anybody. And I feel so much shame and embarrassment, around it, which I shouldn't. And that's why I should share it. And that's why long-term it is positive. It is what helps keep me going, because I know that, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I've already shared this. People already know. I can easily say, hey, I'm not having a good day today. And they understand. Whereas before, if I say, oh, I'm not having a good day today, they're like, oh, did you eat? And I'm like, it's not about the food, guys.
I'm not just hungry. No, thank you.
No. And yes, I did sleep. And, you know, so I think long-term, absolutely, it's helpful to share. And if anybody's listening, I encourage you to share and ask for help and just create that conversation, because the more we normalize mental health the way that we do physical health, the better we will all be, for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And this also kind of leads into the work that you do with your volunteering as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I volunteer with an amazing, oh my gosh, I can't say enough good things about this organization, called Free to Be Talks. And it's a research-based curriculum. I did not develop it. I'm just there as a facilitator, where we go into schools with kids that are grade 6 and 7. And it's all about body image, body self-esteem, body positivity. It's a strengths-based, research-based, evidence-based curriculum. So it's all about how awesome we are. That has nothing to do with what we look like. And we expose behind the scenes of Photoshop, and we do different exercises and activities and group activities. So we go into schools for 6 weeks at a time, or 6 sessions, depending how we schedule it. And that has been so rewarding, because I desperately wish I had that. And now with social media, I can't even imagine, like, this should be mandatory.
Well, there are even times I look at social media, and I've worked in the media for a very long time. And there are times I still have to remind myself that that's not real.
Oh, me too, girl. Absolutely.
Why is her skin so smooth? Oh, wait a sec. It's probably not.
and absolutely. And as a grown woman, you're so right. Yeah. I get so much joy out of volunteering with that organization and going to the schools, and it makes me really feel like I'm making a difference. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Those girls must walk away thinking, oh, you know what? I'm okay.
I think so. And the best part about the program is that it's geared towards girls and boys, because the boys so much get forgotten about. And I was guilty of this too. I did public speaking in schools before I joined this program. And I was talking about body positivity, just using my platform as an RMT who sees people undressed every day. But I was gearing it more towards girls. And then after going through the training to be a facilitator with this program, oh man, I was completely shocked that absolutely it's boys too. And very much so with the explosion of like fitness models and the athleticism. Yeah. Oh, how much pressure that puts on the young men out there, for sure.
And what I'm seeing like tied through all these activities that you do is you're really giving people the tools and empowering them to really be honest with themselves and see the world through a different way that they would be used to seeing it. And I just think that is such a valuable thing to be able to bring to other people and to other people's lives. Mm-hmm. Like what you're doing is really inspiring. And it's just, I love the multi-platforms that you're on and all the activities that you're doing. I think when I first met you, I said, I'd love to see a timeline of how all these things overlap.
Because yes, they do overlap for sure. And I think exactly what you're saying, like the common theme is empowerment, because I want to empower people to embrace their bodies as they are with the volunteering that I do. And then also with my work as an RMT and embracing and empowering them in the healthcare system. And, you know, when they're coming back from injuries or accidents, or you know, they've just had a baby or whatever it is that they're going through, that they have the power to make their life what they want it to be. And with relationships, they have the power to design the relationship that they want to have, and it doesn't have to look like anything you see. It just has to work for you. And I never thought of it that way. Thank you for pointing that out.
You are welcome. now you've listed all these things that you do and these things that you're involved with. So where can people find you?
A few different places. So I've got my website, which is still under my maiden name, which is taylorohlman.com. It's a good omen, but with two O's.
Oh, I like that.
And then my Instagram is my married name. So that's Taylor Aller. And then definitely keep up with us at Relationship Project on Instagram, and then www.relationshipproject.org. And then you can keep up with the events that we're doing, and the blog is all through there. So those are probably the best places.
Lots of resources. And just before we go, have you got any tips for people that, you know, that have an idea like you did, or in the process of building something that doesn't quite exist yet? What would your best tips for success to be to push that forward?
Oh man, so many things come to mind, and then so many of them are cliche. So I don't want to say the cliche because we all know that. Actually, you know what? A tool that really helped me, if I can share a tool instead of advice.
Absolutely.
Mel Robbins, who's phenomenal, Google her and look her up. She's got really great stuff. She has a 5-second rule. And when that got introduced to my life, so many things changed. So she says that according to our physiology and the way that our neuroanatomy works, so our brain, we have about 5 seconds between an idea forming and ourselves talking ourselves out of it. whether that's fear or anxiety or whatever that is. So say you're at a networking party and you have the idea of like, oh, I'd really love to meet that person. You have around 5 seconds, the way my brain works, probably 2, before your brain will say like, no, it's a good idea. Just stay here. You know what? They're probably busy. Oh, they're getting a drink. Somebody else is talking to them. It will insert something to keep you in your comfort zone. Because
oh my goodness, that sounds like my internal brain sometimes.
Oh, it's all ours. That's a way our neuroanatomy works, to keep us in the non-fight or flight version. It keeps us in the rest and digest version, which is more efficient for how our bodies work. I just definitely went on a nerd tangent. Anyway, we have about 5 seconds. So her tool is count down from 5, tell yourself go, and take one action towards it. So if we use that networking party, I would count to myself 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And I would physically just move my feet in that direction and see what happens. And maybe I move my feet and I get all the way over there. Maybe I like sidetrack and get a drink, but then I count again and I go over. And often I'll find myself in front of somebody and they're staring at me expectantly. And I'm like, hey, my name's Taylor and I just think you're really interesting and I'd love to meet you and introduce myself. And whatever comes out after that, hopefully is good. And I would say use that rule and go for it, because you only get to live what once, and it's all about living the best life you can. And that means following your ideas. You absolutely have permission to do more than one thing. If you need it, can like, let me give you that permission, because I know I needed it. You can do more than one thing. count to five and just take an action, send that email, reach out, start the bank account, you know, do what it is you need to do and count to five and do it.
I love that. I love that so much. Well, Taylor, this has been an absolute pleasure. I'm so grateful that we managed to cross paths and that I was able to have a chat to you about your story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so grateful to be here and to be talking with you because you rock. You guys should follow Alyssa too.
Well, I can't wait to, I'm looking forward to catching up, you know, in the near future and seeing where this has gone.
Oh, absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.
To make sure you get the next episode of I Made This, hit subscribe on your podcast app. And if you know of someone who would love this episode or this series, please tell them about it. All the info you can find at the website, imadethispodcast, all one word, .com.